This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Row One Seat One podcast. This is Ben, aka Boston Nuga. We have a little bit of a change this week. We actually have a two-episode week going up. This episode, as you can probably see in your podcast player, is an interview with Dominic Guarini. Dom is a hell of an independent wrestler, especially for someone at his experience level, hell of a jiu-jitsu practitioner as well. We talk about his jiu-jitsu career, his wrestling career, his career as a trainer. It's a really fun interview. He honestly might be the most intelligent guy in independent wrestling, very thoughtful, really cool dude, really good guy. I think you really enjoy this interview. And then going up later in the week is an interview that I did with Tony Deppen. Both Dom and Tony are going to be on the GCW Lights Out show in Nashville, which you guys can see on Fight TV. It is actually sold out, so you cannot attend it if you are in the area. What you can attend if you are in the area is the Wombat Wrestling show that Tony is on, which we will discuss on Tony's episode. But this episode is with Dom Guarini. Dom is actually going to be on night two of SCI and will be at Absolution if you are in the Cleveland area on Friday, August 1st. So if you are in the greater Cleveland, Ohio area, please go to Absolution. If you are not coming to SCI, Dom puts on a hell of a show. AIW is one hell of a promotion, and Dom is a great person to support. So here is my interview with Dominic Guarini. And keep your ears out and your eyes out for my interview with Tony Deppen later on in the week.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Dom is, if you aren't familiar with Dom Guarini's work, first of all, shame on you. He is one of the best wrestlers on the planet. I know I say that about a lot of wrestlers, but I'm just very blessed to have some great wrestlers on. Dom is a champion in jiu-jitsu, an all-around guy, and one of Philip Baroni's best friends.
Oh, how dare you. That's the great joke. Everyone would say, "How dare you?"
Dom comes from a very different background than most, and we'll talk about that a little bit coming up here. Because Dom was a champion jiu-jitsu before he became a professional wrestler. But you've always been a wrestling fan, correct, Dom?
Yeah. So wrestling was actually my first love before I ever knew what mixed martial arts or Brazilian jiu-jitsu were. The story always goes, my mom bought me a Hulk Hogan VHS tape from Eagle Video, which is a defunct video store in the Ohio area when I was a young boy. And I love that tape. And it's like I kind of tell everybody, either you watch wrestling when you're young and you get out of it, or you never get out of it. And I was one of those that really never got out of it.
Man, I miss the video store so much. We always had those tapes we wore out. Mm-hmm. And mine was WrestleMania 4, just because it was two tapes. And I felt like I was just getting more bang for your buck, even though it was like a terrible pay-per-view, like looking back on it.
Oh, it's like watching paint dry, that pay-per-view.
It really was. It absolutely really was. But I felt like I was getting more bang for your buck. But yeah, that, like, and just the video stores going away really sucks. Like, really, really sucks, because you just had that. I mean, you just walked in, it was like heaven for a little kid, for like a little kid like us.
Oh, yeah. And that's you know, growing technology has, of course, killed that. But, I mean, it's cool that, like, the stuff with the WWE Network's around, things like that. Because I can only really imagine having all these, like, VHS tapes, you know, on a digital streaming service for those days where I was sick, where my parents would do that. Or, you know, when my parents would go out to eat and they would leave me at home alone and they would take me out to the video store beforehand to pick a couple tapes. And, you know, it was usually a wrestling tape, so.
Yeah, kind of fast-forwarding a little bit just here, but you're a teacher. It must be... Tape study must be a lot easier for you to teach your students. Just say, go to the network and watch this, right?
Oh, when it comes down to it, I kind of lose my mind once about every four-ish months, I would say. Usually when a new crop of students comes in, because I think everybody gets a preconceived notion that wrestling school like kids come in and they have this broad spectrum of wrestling knowledge. And, you know, me and Thorne have talked about it before, and I'm real guilty of it. Like, when I got into wrestling school, I had read all these autobiographies. I knew about all these wrestlers, and I was ready to go. But that's – I'm the 2% to the 98% that come to a wrestling school, and the emails that I field, these kids know what they see on TV. And I was just talking with somebody about it last night. you know, you look at it, most normal kids get into wrestling when they're about 10 or 11. So let's say I have an 18-year-old kid who's looking to come to the AIW Academy. If they're 18, they were born in 2001. So their wrestling jump-off point now is 2012. So we're talking like...
Oh, that makes me want to kill myself.
I knew that was you were going to say that. but if their wrestling jump-off point is 2012, 10, or 11, you got to think about it like we're almost into like when NXT starts. So like these kids that like people ask me like who's – well, when kids come to the school, who do they cite as their inspirations for wrestling or who do they cite as their favorite wrestlers? I'm like, Finn Balor is number one. And people are like, no. I'm like, yes. I was like, Finn Balor is what a lot of these kids know because like if you have a 21-year-old kid, they've watched this whole Finn Balor genesis of him coming up. Like, they don't know who Furwell Devitt is, but they know who Prince Balor is, or Finn Balor. Yeah. They understand who that is because they watched him in 2013 in NXT, and they've watched him come up to now. So, like, it's a real thing for them. Like, you have a 21-year-old kid, you know, they were born in 1999, so it's wild. But, I kind of got off on a tangent there, but yeah, it's, I tell kids, there's no reason to not watch stuff. YouTube has thousands of free matches for, you know, classic independence. Then you have IW.TV that's got, you know, all of these older shows. And then on top of that, you have the WWE Network. So there's just so much wrestling out there to consume. If I want kids to go watch stuff, I can tell them, hey, go watch this guy, go watch that guy. And it's so much easier to find than back when I was, you know, 21 and I was on Crazy Mac message boards trying to get bootleg DVDs for $3 a disc.
We had to scramble for tapes. You know, we had to beg, borrow, and steal for tapes, and now everything is at your fingertips.
Yep.
And it's just so much easier to have. Not to get up on a tangent, but yeah. So you had your Hulk Hogan tape, and you always loved wrestling, but then you had... When did you discover jiu-jitsu?
So, the way the story always kind of goes is I was about 16 years old. I had found a local independent in the Ohio area that was letting, you know, me and my backyard friends set up the ring. And we thought we were like king shit on Turd Island. And we're like, hell yeah, man. So we're doing this. We're ready. Like, they're going to get ready to open a wrestling school. We're all going to go to wrestling school. And then I decided to go back into high school sports. And then wrestling became a lot less cool to me at that point. And when I started high school wrestling, I found the UFC. So this would have been about 2007-ish. Mm-hmm. So I would have been about 17. So I'm dedicating all my time to like high school football and then high school wrestling. And while I'm doing high school wrestling, me and my buddy, we find a tape of the Abu Dhabi, you know, Combat Club Championships. And we don't know what jiu-jitsu is, but we know, we're like, oh, this Abu Dhabi thing's really cool. And here's Matt Hughes and Tito Ortiz doing like grappling and they're not punching each other. So this is interesting. So we'd start rolling around in the wrestling room during the summer when like no one was in there. And like, we had no clue what we were doing. It was just like grab a choke and like go for it. So that... You know, we go through our wrestling senior years, and then I am 18 years old, or I'm 19. I'm coaching high school wrestling. I'm coaching high school football. I'm going to college, and I'm at the UFC in Columbus the same weekend as the Ohio Wrestling State Tournament, and I run into Henry Cejudo, of all people, current UFC double champion at 125 and 135 pounds. My high school wrestling coach actually coached Henry on the U.S. national team. My high school wrestling coach was a U.S. Olympian. And
who's your high school wrestling coach?
Brian Dolph was his name. He was an NCAA national champion at Indiana. He was a 3-time Olympic trial guy. And the last time he was at the trials, he wrestled Brandon Slay, who he actually coached at University of Pennsylvania. And he lost to Brandon, and Brandon won the gold medal that year. And Brian coached a lot of really good guys, high-level wrestlers. I want to say he was in the Foxcatcher documentary that was on the Netflix. Because Brian was in it, because Brian was very close friends with Dave Schultz. He's got Dave Schultz tattoo on his shoulder.
Oh, wow.
But Brian was friends with Brian Coach Gray Maynard because, you know, Gray's from the Cleveland area. Yep. And we were at the weigh-ins, and I had been batting around the idea of starting jiu-jitsu to kind of get me into maybe training to become a mixed martial artist. So I had the chance to sit down and talk with Cejudo, who at this time hadn't even started fighting yet. He was still going to get ready to run another Olympic cycle. And we got into the discussion, and he really encouraged me to try Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu when I said that I was interested in it. So the following week, I went to Jiu-Jitsu, and here we are 10 years later, and I still train every week. Realistically, my idea for Jiu-Jitsu was I was going to train Jiu-Jitsu, get really good at Jiu-Jitsu, and then start to parlay striking in and be a full-on mixed martial artist, and I was going to go to the UFC. I started to fall in love with the idea of sport jiu-jitsu, though. I started to watch it, and I loved the idea of it, and I ended up kind of putting MMA on the back burner and saying, well, you know what, like, I started competing a lot, and I saw, you know, the higher level of jiu-jitsu, and I was like, I want to be a world champion. So that was kind of where I dedicated my life towards at that point.
So what was it about jiu-jitsu that spoke to you, as opposed to, I mean, because you put wrestling on the back burner, you put sports on the back burner, you put everything on the back burner. What was it about jiu-jitsu that made you fall in love?
It's hard. I think it's just the idea that no matter how good you are, there's probably always someone out there that's better than you, so you've always got to continue to train. No matter how much you know, there's always a new technique you can learn. And just it was a way to compete a lot. And I've kind of always been a competitor, so I think that it was one of the easiest ways to stay a competitor and stay fresh and always, you know, keep learning new skills and sharpen my mind.
Makes sense. And you got pretty high up in jiu-jitsu too. You were nationally ranked, right?
So when I was a white belt, I was just kind of like this like throwaway kid of like not knowing what I wanted to do. Do I want to do this for MMA? Do I want to do this, you know, to, you know, just do something? And once I got my blue belt, I really dedicated myself out to like, okay, well, here are these national tournaments I can do, and here's how I can improve. So when I got my blue belt, I kind of started to set my goals towards becoming a world champion. And each jiu-jitsu belt level, you can win a world title at. So I wanted to win one at blue and purple because I felt like those were two of the hardest to do it at, because that's when all kind of like when all the like jiu-jitsu guys are kind of like at their apex in terms of like, I'm going to compete every weekend and do all this and that. So my goal from the years, I would say 2010 through about 2015, were like, yo, I'm going to win a world title. So I dedicated about five hard years to that. And my first, you know, couple years at blue belt, it was a big learning curve of just like finding out guys were better than me and, just kind of finding my footing. And then those last 3 years I competed, I was just, I would go to tournaments and people knew who I was, and they were like, oh shit, Dom's here. And I did pretty well. I ended up obtaining, like you said, a top 10 ranking in no-gi, and I was top 15 in gi for the IBJJF, which is kind of like the sanctioning body in the United States and internationally for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It was just kind of like keep going, keep grinding, keep going, keep grinding. And, you know, it was one of those things that I got close to the top, but I never really achieved, I guess, what I was supposed to in my mind for that. But that's a whole kind of, you know, caveat as to why I got into wrestling for the most part.
Anyone we know from like mixed martial arts or wrestling, like in those circles? I mean, any notable names that were kind of, you know, rolling around with you there?
Well, I've trained with Stipe before, who is about to challenge for the UFC heavyweight title again.
Cleveland guy, yeah.
Cleveland guy. So he's about to fight DC on August 17th. And he was, you know, the first guy to ever defend the UFC heavyweight title a couple times. And I could not do anything against Stipe. That is the strongest man I've ever met. he's also an awesome guy. I actually have a jiu-jitsu super fight tomorrow against a guy who trains with him, so I'm excited about that. I got the chance to train with Eddie Wineland a few times. He is a UFC bantamweight out of Chicago. He was a former WBC champion when that was around, and then he's fought in the UFC a few times, or a bunch of times, like fought Uriah Faber's, fought some of the best at 135 pounds. Jeff Hughes, who just got into the UFC, he's an old training partner of mine. So he's been, you know, he's been doing really well. He was on the Dana White Contender Series and got signed off of that. Near the end of like kind of like my competition cycle, I got a chance to train with Devontae Smith. Sorry, he is also in the UFC. He's 2-0 currently, and he's another one who got signed off the Dana White Contender Series. So I've gotten a chance to train with a lot of those guys, and it's been amazing.
It's awesome. And why the decision to stick with jiu-jitsu, not go into striking and not go into UFC in general?
I'm too pretty. I'm kidding. I don't know. I took more of a liking to helping my friends out that were getting ready for MMA fights than to actually do it. To be honest with you, I'm a little flat-footed when it came to striking, a little more bullish. I probably could have done some MMA fights. Like, my jiu-jitsu was at a level, especially, you know, in 2014, where I probably could have gone into a lot of amateur MMA fights and held my own with just being able to get guys to the ground. But there's certain things that I do well that don't transition necessarily to the MMA game as well. I'm athletic to a certain degree, but, like, I'm not good at getting takedowns And pulling guard in MMA is kind of death. So that's an idea that I would have had to get to. Plus, I have a weird body, and I never really had an appropriate weight class. Like, I probably would have had to fight at 170, but I'm too big and would have to cut too much weight for an amateur fight in the state of Ohio for that. So that was a real, like kind of thing, because if you fight at 185, I'm a little too small for 185, but I'm a little too big for 170. So there was really no appropriate weight class for me. So that was another big part of, like, making the decision to never fight. But it's one of those things that I had a lot of friends that fought. I helped a lot of those guys get ready for fights. I got to be a cornerman multiple times. So that was something that, like, kind of got it out of my system that way.
See, it's weird because, like, I train, finger quotes, where I go, where they have training, it's half striking and half jiu-jitsu, and the mindsets are so different. Just in the little bit that I've learned, to the point where I don't do any of the jiu-jitsu stuff just because my brain can't register jiu-jitsu whatsoever. Like, it just doesn't click with me. Like, it's like trying to, like, write left-handed or something like that. But the striking stuff makes complete sense to me. But the jiu-jitsu stuff is, like, seriously, it doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. So I didn't know if it was a situation that you were, like, striking was, like, kind of, was, like, something that just didn't register.
I was okay. Jiu-jitsu. I took a lot of striking classes.
Okay, yeah.
And the gentleman in my gym was primarily a striker, and, like, I have good parts of striking. Like, I have good leg kicks and things like that. And some of the things you see me do in pro wrestling, like, you can tell, like,
your strikes are good. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it wasn't like I was bad at it. It was just something that I guess I didn't love it as much as I loved the ground game. And that could have been a high school wrestling thing plus a pro wrestling thing and it being close to those two things. So maybe that's why.
It's such a different part of your brain that you use. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing I've learned. It's just, like, jiu-jitsu's so hard, man. It's so hard.
You know what, though? It's weird because there's people like you that it's so hard for. And then I have a friend who got his black belt 2 years ago, and everything just seems so easy for him. Like, he just – it's literally – it comes down to this. It's a lot like the idea of, the mats or water, and some people are just so adept to swimming and are like sharks, and then other people are just going to tread their whole time. And it's just kind of like, which one are you? Well, let's see.
Yeah, the people who I know who do it, they say it just makes sense to them, and it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the way it is.
Yeah, it's like some people are good, you know, good at certain types of math, and some people aren't. It's just one of those sort of things. So, exactly. So then, but you wrestling was still a love to you. Right? Were you still following wrestling? Was wrestling still in your life all this time? And you just kind of, you know, kept it on the side, like, you know, like a side piece.
So when I first started jiu-jitsu, it was like all jiu-jitsu all day, all MMA all day. Like, but in about 2011, like, CM Punk was always one of my guys. Because, like, at the time, I was, like, a big, like, non-drinker type. And, like, I was, like, man, like, and I remember Punk from Ring of Honor and stuff. To see how well he was doing was something that I was following. And then I followed all the way up to the pipe bomb. And then they did all that. So that kind of sucked me back in. So it was, like, every Monday I'd go to jiu-jitsu practice. I'd record Raw. I would watch Raw on a delay. I would try to catch the pay-per-views when I could with some friends. Because there were still bars in the area that would show them. So that was, like, something I was really into. And then... But I wasn't really into the indies per se because I just didn't have the time. So then I saw Kevin Steen got signed. And Kevin Steen, I will shout out to the rooftops, is my favorite wrestler of all time. He's one of the first independent wrestlers I ever saw and was like a true, like, holy shit, like, this is my guy.
Oh yeah.
And I saw that he got signed. So I started to kind of go back and find everything he had done during the time where I'd kind of fallen out. So, like, we're talking, like, all the Ring of Honor El Generico stuff. We're talking all the stuff he'd just been doing recently of Ring of Honor. And then, you know, that kind of primered me up for when he got in NXT. And then I was kind of, like, watching wrestling pretty regularly at that point again, at least WWE product. So I still definitely had a like and a love for it. And I always kind of say what got me back into wrestling was then, like, the network came out, and then second to the network was – I did 8 weeks training for the world championships in Chicago, and I had nothing to do with my days. So I spent so much time and not knowing what to do that I was consuming a lot of like WWE Network stuff, like old Raws, and, you know, NXT was my big thing every week because I had all these, like, indie guys that I remember that were signed. I was like, okay, and that was kind of where I was at on that.
So at what point do you make the decision to switch over?
Okay, 2015 is the year. And I know this because, like, the state's been brought up, like, this time and period's been brought up a lot over the last like month with getting ready for this super fight. Yeah. So I do the Worlds in 2015. I lose in the second round to this kid. Well, actually, let's precursor. I do the Pans in 2015. I lose this kid named Andrew Wiltsey. I remember the name because he was one of the great, like the best jiu-jitsu guys I've ever gone against. And I just got destroyed. And I've never felt that helpless, like in a jiu-jitsu match. It's like I'm top 15 in the world. Like I'm pretty good. And this kid just destroys me. Well, he goes on to destroy me, destroys everybody else in the tournament. He wins gold at the Pan Ams, the only American to place in the open weight division at the Pan Ams. And I'm like, shit. So I go to Worlds a couple months later, and I lose in the first round. So it's like one of those things where I lose in the first round of Worlds, and I'm just really kind of at a crossroads, and I'm stuck in Chicago for another week. So in the 5 years prior, after every tournament, I never stopped training. I took the week off after that World Championships, and I'd never done that before. So I take it off. I reassess things. I come back to Ohio. I start training again a little bit. I'm not really sure where I want to go with it. I sign up for like a tournament in the like the later summer, but I end up actually going to Raw in Cleveland. I skipped jiu-jitsu to go to Raw in Cleveland, and of all things, it's the Raw where Kevin Owens is like kind of like running wild, and he powerbombs MGK of people off the stage.
Yes.
And I tell people this because it's a very poignant thing. And I remember I go home that night and I search wrestling schools Canton, Ohio, because that's at the time I was living in Canton. Yeah. And AIW and another local school popped up. Now, in a small twist of fate that no one would ever believe, two kids that I trained in jiu-jitsu for about 10 years, their dad, of all things, his prior profession before getting the kids into jiu-jitsu was a professional wrestling referee in the area. Just small world shit.
Crazy.
And I asked him, I said, where would you go to train? I said, because I'm going to do this. And he said, well, he goes, I go to AIW because it's probably, you know, going to give you better opportunities. So I remember I email AIW about the training academy, and I emailed them, I think, the week before Absolution 10. And I had bad tires on my car. And it was never going to happen that week. So I get new tires in my car. Then Absolution's that week, so they set up for Absolution. So I don't go to the school until the week after Absolution. But essentially, I decided to get out of jiu-jitsu because I just felt like after dedicating 5 years of my life to winning a world championship and getting destroyed by a kid who trained for 2 years, I always felt there might just be somebody that was better than me. And I felt like I might just be kind of treading water here. And I'm like a weird dream chaser. So I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to be a pro wrestler. Let's do this and let's promote jiu-jitsu to the masses in a different way and maybe get some people to start jiu-jitsu based off of seeing my style in the ring. So that was where the decision to kind of go from jiu-jitsu to pro wrestling came from.
And it just so happens that you live in the same town as one of the five or six, if not three, best indies in the country is.
Yes. Well, I was living an hour south, but close enough. Yeah, like yeah. when someone says I live in Chicago, usually they live an hour out of the city.
Yeah.
So it's very similar.
Well, I tell people I'm from Boston, but I grew up an hour north. Yeah.
Same yeah, deal. Yeah. That's what everybody says.
Yeah.
So yeah, I pretty much grew up in like, you know, I was, you know, an hour south of Cleveland. So.
So you started the AIW training. Is it easier, harder than you expected? About what you expected?
So it's a little different than I expected.
Interests me.
So it's a little different than what I expected because you read about training in these books and most of the guys have such an old way of being brought up. They brought up in the territory days, you know, like no one told them it was a work. They got the shit kicked out of them, things like that. Johnny and Candace are not that way at all. And John and Chandler were always around when I started to, and it was never that way. You know, Johnny's in immaculate shape, so you had to be in pretty good shape, but I was coming off of being a competitive jiu-jitsu for 5 years, so I was in pretty solid shape. I was able to kind of pass everything with flying colors the first day that they expect, and when it comes to fitness and things like that, so they were more than, you know, excited to get me started. But you know, it was a lot of like just kind of learning the basics, and I was a little quicker because of my backyard experience of all things. I had befriended a wrestler back when I was 16 that taught me how to bump, so like I kind of already had like a cheat sheet on how to bump, so that stuff was easier. But when it came to like a lot of like smaller adjustments, like hey, how do you sell emotion when you've been taught not to not sell emotion on your face for the last 7 years? That's completely new. Hey, you have to have these emotional outbursts to show excitement when you're not allowed to do those things in jiu-jitsu. So it was a big kind of transition period for things like that Johnny always kind of knew were going to be my issues from the start, and that like Thorne and Biggins were able to kind of point out too would be things that I'd have to work on. So that was definitely one of those things that those were the things that like were the bigger poignant things for me when I started, because I was able to know things like roles and ring positioning and things, because, you know, I have to know mat position for when I'm doing jiu-jitsu, and I have to, you know, roles are a pretty basic thing in most martial arts at this point. So,
and you're a smarter guy too, so I mean, I can see you picking up on things pretty quickly too. And you also had to learn new moves, and you also had to learn, so you're used to picking up on new things quickly, because in jiu-jitsu mm-hmm. you had to pick up on new moves quickly.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And that's always something, you know, you've always got new techniques to learn, and it's very similar mm-hmm. in wrestling. You know, we've always got a new technique to learn, mm-hmm. a different way to get into something. So, you know, it's one of the things I liked a lot.
Yeah. So it was a transferable skill. Definitely. So you're how long from when you first picked up wrestling to your first match?
So this is always something, that I think people look into. I started training in the beginning of August in 2015, and my debut was March of 2016. It could have been they thought about doing me in December of 2015, but it didn't necessarily work out. But I debuted in March of 2016. It worked out best. My class is one of the different kind of AIW classes, but most of the classes of the AIW kids all debut together. They usually have like 5 to 6, and that's what I shoot for out of my classes mm-hmm. to get anywhere between 4 to 6. But for my class, it was just me and Garrison King. We were the only two that were ready at the time, and it was our time to go, and they called us up, and, you know, we had our first match at this little ratty bar in Menor called Tequila Jacks, and, you know, we did a scramble, and from there, the rest is kind of history.
Well, I didn't realize you'd been that recent in the business, because I remember from 2016, 2017, you were already going national. So did you hit the ground running?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing is I definitely hit the ground running, and that was something that I think Thorne always knew out of me, and I think Johnny and Candace kind of always knew out of me, because I was always so willing to go and do everything. And I always kind of tell the kids at the school, I said, if you want to hit the ground running and get after this, you can. It's just you guys gotta kind of scratch at the doors and hope that someone opens. And I got lucky in terms of that. I got lucky in terms of Riddle was coming on real strong at that time, and the kind of grappler style was very in vogue at that time, and my background helped me out a lot. But also little things that helped me out a lot during that time was, you know, the AIW Twitter posting a video of me catching Alex Daniels in a 450 into a triangle choke out of nowhere. That looked amazing. That got a lot of retweets on my like third match ever. My first singles match ever was against Tracy Williams at the J-Lit, and it was a complete and total match that was never supposed to happen, and that went well. And then BJ Whitmer saw me, and he loved me, so he wanted to work with me, and that gave me a chance to do that. So a lot of lucky breaks along the way, too.
And Johnny and Candace obviously had to help, too, because you had the pedigree of, you know, two legendary, you know, pantheon independent wrestling figures as well. Talk about them as teachers and as people.
Mom and dad, that's kind of how we always looked at him. Johnny, but it's like reverse roles. It was like the dad's always supposed to be the hard one on you, and the mom's supposed to bring you back, whereas it was like Candace was the hard one on us, because that was kind of how she was brought up. So Candace was always really hard, and she was the mean one, whereas Johnny was always the nice one, and tried to like oh, it's okay. But, you know, like Johnny and Candace, they laid the bound. Me and Dr. Dan were talking about this last week, because Dr. Dan, you know, and me are very similar in like terms of where we came graduation-wise. You know, Candace and Johnny laid us a basement foundation to a house, and we had to build off that foundation, but they gave us such a strong foundation that it was up to us to build the house the proper way and not fuck it up. Mm-hmm. And I think all the AIW kids that came from the Johnny and Candace's, you know, tutelage have built those foundations, and they built pretty solid little houses for themselves. And, you know, Johnny always knew kind of where my money was going to be as a wrestler. He always told me that, you know, no matter how much I wanted to be something else, I was always going to have to be a shooter type wrestler, and to not hide what was going to be my strong skills. And Candace always said the same thing. So they would always try to teach me stuff that would help me, you know, with things like that. And then also, you know, getting to work Tracy Williams really, really helped me out, because Tracy has been like an extra wrestling trainer to me. He always looked out for me at every booking we were ever on together as well. He helped teach me a lot about wrestling, the arts of it, where to put things. And he always took a lot of time to help me out when he never necessarily needed to.
And talk about that style a little bit too, because your style is, you know, wildly different than most. And I think that's what helps you stick out in wrestling and makes you one of the most unique independent wrestlers in the country, because you evolve that jiu-jitsu with independent wrestling. And you know, you'd be a heck of an independent wrestler even if you didn't integrate jiu-jitsu with your style. But the fact that you do, you know, integrate jiu-jitsu with your wrestling style makes you one hell of an independent wrestler. What would you describe your style like?
So that's one of the big things, was I never wanted to kind of sell out my style. I always wanted to, you know, kind of use this in terms of promoting jiu-jitsu to a mass audience. And that was kind of one of my ideas, was if I could, you know, show jiu-jitsu off to the masses in a way that at the time jiu-jitsu wasn't really as popular as it's gotten to be now. If I could show that off to the masses in a certain way, that was kind of where I wanted to be. And by doing stuff like sweeps and submissions that people don't see all that often, if I could do things like that, that was kind of, you know, what my game plan was. So I would start to bring jiu-jitsu moves, and I would show them to Johnny and Candace, and we would think of, you know, different ways to make them work in a pro wrestling setting.
Yeah, that's very evident, because you're creative, and I love your creativity with your jiu-jitsu along with your wrestling as well, because you can have a standard wrestling match, and I've seen you have those, but I've also seen you integrate, you know, a hybrid jiu-jitsu style, you know, in that as well, and that's, you know, it's just the creativity is off the charts.
Yeah, it's all about having the right opponent for that. Like Tom, like I've gotten the chance to wrestle Tom Lawler a bunch, and he gives me that option, and Treese Williams, who's done a lot of training, has given me options on stuff. So it's, you know, with the right opponent, I can do something real cool, and different. And that's always, so that's something that Tracy always instilled upon me, was be different. You know, don't sell yourself out and don't sell your character out. You know, you have this thing that makes you different, be different.
So where are some of your breaks from there? What were some of the big, you know, stepping stones from there in your career? Because it's only been like 3.5 years.
So big breaks kind of go in this order. It starts at Chase Williams singles match, where the kind of AEW crowd is like, holy cow, like his kid's got a lot of potential. I get to wrestle BJ Whitmer in September of 2016. You know, he loves the match, loves me as a wrestler, wants to work an elongated program with me. So that gives us an option. Then November of 2016, somehow Thorne books Zack Sabre Jr., and I'm out to eat with him one night after training, and I go, and he starts going through the card, and he goes, we're gonna do Dom versus Zack Sabre Jr. And like, I double took him. I'm like, what? Shit. He's like, yeah. He's like, make or break. He goes, you're either gonna make yourself, or you're gonna break yourself. So I get to wrestle with Zack Sabre Jr. And my like 6 months into the wrestling business, and after the match, Zack puts me over on the mics, literally has a quote that says he does know, and he goes, you know, you're supposed to suck for the first 10 years of wrestling, right? He's like, how are you so good? And we kind of go from there. 2017 comes around. I finished this feud with BJ. I actually get to have BJ's last wrestling match ever, from everything I know, because he's having neck surgery, and I think he's officially done wrestling now. So I get BJ's last match ever. I get on WrestleMania weekend down in Florida.
Yep, that's right.
Me and Kurt, Kurt Stallion and I have a really great match in front of like 10 people in a storage garage.
One of which was
probably you.
Yep.
I'd say one of which was you, one of which was Dylan Hales. Yep. So that got me a lot of good buzz. I do that match, and then I wrestle Martin Stone the next night. And that match got some good buzz. So I come back from WrestleMania weekend pretty hot. And then from there, it's just kind of like a hit the ground running type thing throughout the rest of 2017, of just running and gunning, getting good matches in AIW. You know, John has always given me amazing opportunities to prove myself. And like, as well, during that time in 2017, then, you know, SUP becomes a pretty big part of everything. April 2017, I do the first SUP show, and then I get brought back for you know, the sub show after SCI, and we just keep going from there. And other things like I did in 2017, like I debuted for Evolve in 2017, doing the Stokely security guard gimmick and getting some great matches there. Then last year just kind of was like subtitle, doing all of this stuff, you know, in AIW with Tom Lawler, because we did that for almost the whole year of 2018. And then after that, I mean, it's just kind of all been, you know, Kevin and I as a tag team and just everything else. So it's been a wild ride the last like 2 years for sure.
Basically, if it's east of the Mississippi, you've been in the promotion.
Pretty much. Yeah. Chikara was one of the last promotions I had to check off of that list. And I debuted for them last weekend. So yeah, there's not a lot in the Northeast. There's not a lot east of the Mississippi that I haven't done yet.
Now, near and dear to me, SUP, you've been, you know, a Mount Rushmore wrestler basically there. You hold the tag belts there. You were the Bone Storm champion there. You've been just one of the pillars there and had possibly the best match they've ever had there. The last show they had, the tag team match with you and Kevin against Marco and Cabana Man Dan, which was just bloody and brutal and wonderful. But you've been, talk about SUP as it's near and dear to your heart, because that's been, even though you're in Cleveland and they're in Nashville, that seemed like a home promotion for you.
SUP is a second home to me at this point. It's, you know, it introduced me to probably my best friend in wrestling in Kevin. You know, Kevin and I talk daily and we really are best friends. That's not just a tag team thing. That's a real life thing. And, you know, I met Jesse before I met Kevin ever, actually. And Jesse came up to AIW, the Double Dare Tag Tournament, with Carrie and Nick and Papa Hills. So I made friends with Jesse, and then I did his podcast December of 2016. And we kind of built off of there. We talked about SUP, and, you know, he offered me the first show with a carload of, like, me and some of the AIW guys. So we came down, and I had been on every SUP show except for two. The second show ever I couldn't do because it was the same night as an AIW show. And then last year I couldn't do the post SCI show because I had to do Evolve. So those are the only two shows I've ever missed. And you know, missing that post SCI sub show last year, like, that literally bodied me. Like, that one hurt a lot. And like, I don't ever want to miss sub shows. And that's one of the big things, because it is such a family down there. And I think that, you know, SUP has kind of redefined Southern, especially wrestling in Tennessee, and kind of Southern wrestling in general. And there wasn't a whole lot of options out there in the Nashville area before SUP came along. And I know that, especially from speaking to Kevin and speaking to Jesse. So to see what, you know, it's kind of grown into, and to see that environment in Basement East, there's a few venues I wrestle in that are as awesome as Basement East.
Oh, it's become a family. You know, as a fan, it's become, you know, a family atmosphere, and it's become, you know, I had Kevin on here a few weeks ago, and it's just what it's become has just become, like you said, it's become a family, and it's such a cool vibe, and it's so much fun to go to shows. I just look forward to them. I think I've only missed about two or three, and it kills me to miss them, you know. And it's such a cool atmosphere that's been created there. It's just so much fun. And you're, with Kevin as well, you've gone from working singles to working a tag team with Kevin. What kind of prompted that career shift?
Oh, that's an interesting one. So I was, this was, we probably first teamed last year, I want to say July-ish. So it was one of those things where Kevin and I were talking a lot. We were talking daily, you know, and I thought how cool would it be if we were able to become a tag team. And we were given the opportunity to do it in Pro Wrestling Freedom. Carrie booked us as a tag team. So that kind of was where it started. The idea behind it was, we talked so much about wrestling together that we kind of knew each other so well, and we knew that we could be a tag team. The other thing, one of the other big things that we knew was, it's really easy for tag teams to get more national acclaim and national bookings right now, because there's a lack of good tag teams on the independent scene. There's probably maybe anywhere between five to seven good tag teams on the independent scene. And Kevin and I knew that we were good enough as singles that we could come together. We could come together and be super good, super quick. And then we decided with what some people would call the worst tag name of all time when we started. But that was more of a personal thing for Kevin and I. It was our love of RingConf and the fact that we were both, you know, very sad people at the time. But we were able to kind of spin it that we were able to call ourselves SadConf because we were sad at the state of where professional wrestling and specifically tag team wrestling were.
It was maybe the worst name for a tag team ever.
It's okay. No. The greatest quote I've ever heard ever was Tracy Williams when we wrestled Hot Wheels at Beyond Wrestling. He tweeted something along the lines of, "Watch two awesome tag teams fight and decide who has the worst tag team name of all time."
But you guys have been killing it. I mean, you had to basically reestablish yourselves a little bit, you know, because you're a tag team and people know you as singular entities, and you've basically been killing it as a tag team, you know, across the country and kind of starting over and you know, reconquering the Eastern Seaboard again.
Yeah, and we got a lot of good opportunities early with some people that had known us from other stuff. So obviously we were able to reassess, and SUP was easy to become a tag team in. But then, you know, we were given the opportunity to do it on Black Label. Kevin was teaming with Percy, and he kind of wanted out of that because it wasn't serious enough for him. So there was a perfect built-in storyline to bring me back because I'd been suspended technically under Black Label management. I had been suspended for, you know, so long from Black Label. That was a great way to bring me back in. So we did it there. And now what we call Defunct Pro out of Virginia, we were a tag team there and we got some good opportunities there. And it's just kind of been a build from there. And it's been a great thing because we've gotten the chance to do Beyond out of it.
Yep.
And you know, we had both individually wanted to work Beyond, and it worked best for us to get there as a tag team. And honestly, sometimes getting to do cool stuff and wrestling with your friends is the absolute best. And, you know, the stuff I've been able to do over the past year on the tag team with Kevin has made everything worth it.
And not only that, but in the last year as well, you've kind of shifted to becoming a teacher as well. You're teaching at the AIW school, correct?
It's been more than the last year. Okay, so yeah. In all reality, the AIW school kind of runs like this. I started August 2015, literally 2 weeks after I started the school. Johnny and Tommaso are on NXT TV quite a bit as a tag team. They win in the first round of the Dusty Classic that year, and it's like no one knows what's going on. Johnny's keeping everything real quiet, and my thought process is, holy shit, I just started the school and Johnny Gargano's gonna get signed right away. Well, they were under Johnny and Tommaso got those really sick Samoa Joe deals where they were able to work indies but still get WWE money. And then more power to both those guys because I know. Yeah. So we ended up having Johnny for the rest of 2015 and then most of 2016. Johnny didn't leave us until October of 2016 because that was when he was officially signed under contract. They had won the tag titles and he had to move to Orlando. So in like around mid-September 2016, Johnny and Candace move. At this point, you know, the school's kind of in disarray. We don't really know who's going to be the trainer. But before Johnny and Candace left, they put myself and Alex Daniels in charge. They kind of knew that we were the guys that had the most experience in terms of getting out there. But they also knew that I had coaching experience from martial arts and from, you know, being a high school wrestling coach and a high school football coach. So those two and Thorne and Biggins knew too. And Thorne and Biggins knew of my coaching background, so they were pretty active in getting me around. One of my big things those first year and a half there was trying to get to seminars, learn stuff. So I had stuff, but I also have a really weird steel trap memory type thing out of, you know, remembering stuff that Johnny taught us. So I was doing things like that. The way it all falls down is, you know, we lose Chandler in, you know, June of 2017. But realistically, he was, you know, he'd been sick since March 2017. Yeah. So Alex kind of fades out around July of 2017. So starting in July of 2017, it's pretty much the Dom show where it's me, you know, training the kids with a couple of helpers, you know, like Dr. Dan will come when he gets off work and help me on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But it was a lot of me, and it's a lot of stress, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot of stress for the guy at the time, a little over a year and a half into his wrestling career, to now have all these other kids' careers in his hands. Because I'm still trying to figure everything out, and it's my job to teach all these kids, too. You know, John helped me out a lot in terms of, you know, being a grandpa type voice in their ears of like, hey, this is how you do this, this is how you do that. But when it came to wrestling, it was all me. So it helped out that the first class of kids that I trained was just super athletic. And that first class of kids might end up being the best AIW class we've ever had. When you look at it, it's like Josh Bishop, Trey Lamar, Big Twan Tucker, Chase Oliver, like just really good kids out of that class. So their match was easy to put together. But, you know, from there, that's one class of six guys. There's another class of six guys and another class of four guys and another class of four guys. So I did the math last week. So far, there's been 13 graduates of the AIW Academy since I became the head trainer.
There you go.
So it's a lot. It's yeah. I said on the AIW podcast this week, you know, becoming the head trainer of the school, it's kind of killed any personal life I have. And, you know, that's my own personal decision to not really have a personal life. You know, on Mondays and Wednesdays, you know, my days are consumed by my normal job, followed by jiu-jitsu. And then Tuesdays and Thursdays, it's my normal job, followed by pro wrestling practice. And then Friday through Sunday is usually some sort of wrestling-related activity.
No dom time.
There's very little dom time. That's why if you follow me on Instagram and you see me post the movie poster, it means I'm at the movies. So that's most of my dom time. But, you know, it's a decision I've made. And and I get to see kids like Josh Bishop. I get to see kids like Trey Lamar. I get to see Twan Tucker on NXT TV. And I think, man, like, look at these kids and look at what they're doing. And, you know, I have a small part in that. You know, 3/4 of that is them. But there is that small part of, you know, I gave them, you know, an idea. And I remember someone telling me that they talked to Twan one day and he said that I'm like a dad to him. So, like, to hear stuff like that, it makes the no dom time worth it, you know?
Great. Yeah, that's absolutely great. So you're teaching now. You're traveling around the country now. You're doing a great job. You're influencing kids' lives. What's in the future?
Well, the future lies in hopefully, you know, Kevin and I, you know, hitting that next level when it comes to independent wrestling, whether it be, you know, a contract somewhere. I'm going to Germany in October to take part in WXW's Ambition Tournament, which is an all shoot style based tournament. And I'm really excited about that. That's been a real big bucket list thing for me. And just hopefully, you know, just bigger and better, you know, that's the game plan.
And you have your first it'll be done by the time people hear this, but you have your first, jiu-jitsu match by the time people have heard this, correct?
Yeah. So we're recording this on the 12th, and then the 13th, which would be tomorrow, is my first jiu-jitsu match since November of 2015. So I'm excited about that, and we'll see how that goes. And if that goes well and I can open the schedule up, I'd like to do either another tournament or try to get another super fight lined up somewhere along the lines this year to kind of try to stay active and almost become quasi a two-sport athlete.
Fantastic. And then coming up, you have Absolution, which is the Friday the 2nd.
The 2nd.
Then you're going to be at Night 2 of SCI, and then you have SUP, correct?
Yes. Very busy weekend.
Very busy weekend. A lot of miles in the car. I don't know anybody who puts as many miles in the car these days as you.
I would say Stallion put way more Stallion on it back before he started getting those, before he started getting the flights, and God bless Kurt, because Kurt looks like a whole new man. He looks much more rejuvenated than he did after doing those 19-hour round trip travels.
Yeah, I had him last week on, and he told me, I'm like, how'd you do it? And he goes, well, I just pawned a lot of stuff, and that's why I paid for gas. But yeah, you might be the king of the road these days.
I'm up there, but there's a lot of guys out there that might not get the recognition that put a lot of miles on the car. And, like, of all people, like an Ethan Page, when he's not getting flown, he puts a lot of miles on the car. And he does that to get, you know, opportunities for the Kobe Durst, the Shane Sabers, those guys of the world, you know, his kind of quasi-students that he's, you know, put under his wing. So I always look at like Ethan Page and respect him for that stuff, because that's a guy that could request a flight everywhere but will offer to drive with those kids so we can get those kids, you know, more experience and more exposure.
So who are you working at Absolution?
It'll be myself versus AIW stalwart Tim Donst. Tim and I had a small interaction in the Gauntlet for the Gold where he low-blowed me and eliminated me from the Gauntlet, effectively ending my dreams of getting the Absolute title at Absolution. So after that, we were scheduled in a singles match at Keep Their Heads Ringing, where that show was all no rules. So Tim, he decided to attack my knee throughout the match. And when he couldn't get me to quit, he hit me in the head with the chair and knocked me out and put me in a chokehold. And referee Tom Dunn, you know, sensing I couldn't defend myself, called the match. So Tim decided to wear a shirt Jayla Weekend that said Dots 2 seconds because he said that was how quickly it was that he put me to sleep. Jayla Weekend, I got to wrestle Eric Stevens first round. I don't like to put my matches over much, but that's one match that if you can watch, please watch. Eric Stevens is back. He's here for a short time, not he's a long time, really but good. He is fucking great, and he's just as good as he was 10 years ago, if not better.
Yeah.
So see that. But I won first round. I beat Eric Stevens in the main event of night one. Tim lost to SUP legend Marco Stunt first round. So I had to move on to the second round, and Tim would have effectively gone home. But Tim decided to pick on some of my new students the second day of J-Lit. And they in an 8-man tag, and Tim won the match, submitting one of my students. Then he decided to start to beat my other students up. So I had enough of it. I had enough of the trash talk, and I have challenged Tim at Absolution to my specialty match in AIW: submit or surrender.
Ooh, that should be real good.
So the last submit or surrender match, for anybody that didn't watch it, is myself versus Joshua Bishop at WrestleMania weekend, and it was a whole thing.
That was the thing. That might have been my match of Mania, definitely my top two or three matches of Mania weekend. Maybe the most fun match of Mania. Well, not for you, but
oh no, it was fun. It's fun. It's fun in a way.
You almost got lit on fire.
That did happen, but
dear Lord. And you bled Tim Dodson
is going to have to light me on fire to get me to submit or surrender in this one. Let's put it that way. Jesus so that's Christ. that's kind of where we're at on Absolution. Absolution, we still have general admission tickets available. All front row has sold out, though. That includes all front row sold out. That includes our stage front row and our sitting front row, as well as our stage seating that we have at this new venue, the Odeon. That is all sold out. But there are still general admission tickets left, so please come out and support. And if you cannot be in Ohio that night, and if you're not at SCI or if SCI ends early, we are doing a Fight TV live stream of Absolution. I think the cost is $15. Even if you guys get it at SCI, you guys can watch it after while you guys are doing, you know, SCI things.
at the prom.
Because it's always on demand, so.
We can watch it at the prom.
Yes, correct.
Which will be a thing.
Well, you guys have no Nick Gage this year, so.
And then the next night, I don't think we've announced or they've announced your match for SCI night two yet, have they?
Yep, I'm in the dark on that. I'm just listed as a scheduled talent, so I will see everybody there.
Yeah.
I will probably be at Futures that morning, shaking hands and kissing babies. So if you want to come up and see me and probably touch my whatever wounds I have from the night before, please go ahead.
I might bring Ava to that, so I might direct Ava away from you because she doesn't like blood. So
yes, well, please do. But then I'll be there, and then like you said, night two of SCI. So SCI always holds a special place in my heart, and I'm excited to be back this year. So
cool. And then you'll be at SUP the next day, right?
SUP the next day, as Kevin and I will be defending the SUP Tag Team Trophy at the current time. We'll be defending it against Daniel Maccabe and B-Boy. So the West Coast connection coming down to the South to try to take the title off of us. So we will see. We're real excited about that match.
That could be the match of the weekend.
We're hoping. I know that Daniel and I have wanted to tangle in some way, shape, or form for a while. We'd like to do in a single somewhere, so if anybody who has pull here wants to make that match, go ahead and please do it. If not, enjoy this, because realistically, I think this is for really, really, really talented wrestlers. And I know that I worked B-Boy last year for PWF at the Primus tournament, and I had we had a great match, and I want to kind of see where we are and go from there. And I think that, you know, you add Kevin and Daniel to the mix, and it can only get better.
And if people want to book you or hear you on a podcast or attend your school, how do they get in touch with you?
So there's two emails. So if you want to book me or you want me on your podcast, bookdgarini@gmail.com. That's kind of like the go-to for my bookings. Or if you want, hit me up on Twitter, even Instagram, if you guys want. Those two handles are @dgarinibc. And then when it comes to the school, you can either email one of two emails, either AIW@AIWrestling.com or Dominic@AIWrestling.com. If you're in the greater Cleveland area, and by greater Cleveland, I mean anywhere within 2 hours, I really think that I would put any of our graduates up against almost any wrestling school in the nation over the past couple years. Guys, like I said, and you know, guys like Trey Lamar, Chase Oliver, Josh Bishop, Big Twan Tucker, Zach Thomas, Wes Barkley, all these guys, man, just out there making names themselves and really getting out there. And I really, like I said, I would put our students up against any school from anywhere.
And then you also appear regularly on John Thorne's podcast, correct?
Yes, AIW's The Card is going to change. I'm a pretty regular cast there. So please, you know, give us a listen on that. And if you guys are really interested in kind of the backstage of wrestling and independent wrestling, you know, John Bear's all on that podcast. You know,
one of my favorite podcasts.
There's two great episodes. One would be the old Sid episode where John's having an existential breakdown that he's booked an entire show around Sid. And I was, you know, at the forefront of that. And hearing John, you know, go through this grief of knowing that he's promised Sid 2 days after Christmas to all the Cleveland fans, and he has to tell them that Sid's a psychopath who just was never going to take the date but let us on and let us buy the ticket. So that's a great episode. And then about a month ago, when Rey Fénix just kind of ghosts Thorn, yep. And we booked an entire show based on the Lucha Bros, and it's him and Hornswoggle, and Swoggle's trying to essentially keep him sane during that time. So those are a couple great episodes, and there's a lot of great episodes if you go back and you can listen to the late great Chandler Biggins and hear his voice, you know, again. And Chandler gives some great stories on those podcasts too.
And then I will also give a podcast recommendation because you were on possibly my favorite podcast of the last year. You did an episode of Pod Van Dam.
Yes, my good friends, Young Ed, Ron Two Legs, Pat Franklin, and Thrift Store Jobber. So that podcast started as just like someone testing out Phil Baroni, and someone asked about, is someone going to talk about it? And I literally just out in the open, hit up Pod Van Dam, and I was like, hey, I'll talk about all of my experiences with Phil. And I bear all on that podcast. And I will precursor this to what I said to everybody else. The podcast is not meant to bury Phil. I like Phil. I respect Phil, especially as his MMA past. But the story of that weekend had to be let out, and of the horrors that were that match.
It was amazing. It's an hour long, and you were just honest. You didn't come out to bury Phil at all. You just told the, because everyone else has Baroni stories too. I have a Baroni story where he got me on FaceTime with Frank Mir.
Yeah, I believe that. Phil was on a whole different level that weekend, and you know, I mean, he had fun, and you know, hopefully everything. I'm hoping that Phil's doing fine, and
he's still at the White Eagle Hall. He's sleeping in a closet.
I would assume so. Yeah. If you guys want, like I said, Pod Van Dam's a great podcast. Because not only do they do that episode, but those guys do a great, hilarious podcast every week. And I'm sure this week's episode with the Twitter shenanigans that went on this week will be great. Retroactive it to the week of like July 5th through like the 12th or whatever. Yeah. Because I'm sure with all the Twitter shenanigans, it's gonna be wild.
Oh yeah. So Dom, you're a great friend, a good guy, a hell of a wrestler, and I wish you nothing but the best this weekend and in the coming weeks, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, talk to you soon. Bye. Bye.
On the BTBN Pop Feed, the Sarcastic Four continue their look at 1971 with the second of their three-part episode of Marvel Age. On the 30th episode of Songs with Friends, Steve and Kelly pay tribute to 1994. The hard-traveling fanboys continue Spider-Man Month with their review of the latest MCU film, Spider-Man Far From Home. DC4U continues its celebration of Superman with a look at the classic Alan Moore Kurt Swan story, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow? Geek and Sassy welcome Tim Capel to review Season 2 and preview Season 3 of Stranger Things. Join Glenn and Scott as they run down all the candidates in the coming presidential election in New Spectacular. On a new episode of NBA Team, Adam Murray and Andrew Ritchie reflect on what has been quite the last week in NBA land. That Russ trade was ridiculous. The greatest song of the 80s tournament continues. There'll be 6 polls a day posted for round 1, and please don't vote for a Billy Joel song. You can get into the action by searching PTBN's greatest song of the 80s tournament, which does not involve Billy Joel, and liking the page. Be sure to weigh in and don't vote for Billy Joel. On the PTBN Wrestling feed, in the 11th episode of Roto 1 Seat 1, I interviewed Kurt Stallion. On episode 130 of Main Event, Scott, Nate, and Steve are joined by my brother, Pete Schermacher, to talk to NGP, New Japan's G1 Climax, AEW Impact Evolve, and much more. Tim, Jenny, and Greg are back with talking WCW, and they looked at War Games. JT and Chad opened up the 96th year looking at the Royal Rumble on Wrestling Warzone. Jennifer Smith drew Wardlow and Matt Souza gathered to look break down the 86 Crockett Cup. On PlaceToBeNation.com, the tribute to 94 is off and running with pieces on the Best Picture nominees for the Academy Awards in 94, the 94 World Cup, and the miniseries The Stand. The excellent Network Adventure Team is back with a look at Black Saturday from 84. Check out our social media pages and message board at Bigelow.34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in the conversation today and start researching your lists.
Wonderful day.